Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your outpost for the week is freshly delivered this week, and I am just one host. That's right. It's delivered this week. Just in case you didn't get that, this week, your outpost is delivered. And I'm just one of your hosts here, the ever tongue-tied Matthew Rushing. And with me, as she is every single week, the eloquent Drea Kaufman.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
We were pre-show joined by the little munchkin.
That's
true.
She
just really wanted to say hello and not leave mommy alone. So, I mean, this is a family show after all, so...
It is.
Why not have a little family?
Now, is she the mini Slytherin? Is she a mini Hufflepuff? You know, what house do you think she is, at least in this moment?
It kind of depends on the situation. She, when she was a little younger, the daycare called her their little Pufflepuff. Because she was like... very kind and caring to the other kids, and like she cared about their feelings and stuff. But as she's getting a little older and a little more talkative, she's definitely like way more outspoken and bossy. So I'm gonna go with she's kind of like a Hufflepuff Gryffindor combination, kind of depending on the circumstances.
Nice. So.
She's really smart too, though. But I mean, she could be like a little Hermione. So
very cool.
We'll see how it all pans out.
Yeah, I mean, she's got plenty of time, so.
Yeah, she's two.
You know, what's really cool, though, is I don't like to rank reviews, but we got a review that kind of stopped my heart in the best way, and so we really want to say thank you to OK Dad, which, what a great name for their account there on Apple, but OK Dad gave us 5 stars and said...
Is it because you're reading it like, OK Dad?
OK Dad.
OK Dad.
Money well spent, they said, though. I'm a huge Harry Potter fan. And I've watched the movies like a kajillion times, even though I've never read any of the books. I was looking for a new podcast and came across yours. I love it. The commentary is great. You explain everything so well that I had to buy the whole Harry Potter book set. I can't wait for it to arrive so I can start reading it. Thank you for making me realize what I've been missing out on. I can't think of a better compliment on the entire planet than saying that we convince somebody who's only seen the movies to read the books to read the books. Done.
Boom. It only took 6 books, but we did it.
Looks like we made it.
I do love it. I love, they're so much richer, and they tell a similar story enough that, you know, the movies tell a fairly close recant of the books, but sticks pretty well to the core plot line. But I do love the world she builds in the books, and I'm so excited that we convinced others to do the books instead of just the movies. So I love it.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's something that I it's a constant refrain of mine, you know, when I'm talking to people, and if they've mentioned that they liked the movies but they haven't ever read the books, I'm like, you've got to read the books, because like you were saying, there's such a level of detail that she goes into. And yes, the story is similar, but I would say that the books are better because the resolution in the end makes so much more sense by the time you get to it. But it's also just so much more satisfying too, because all of the details that she puts into her books, as we've mentioned many times, it's not an accident. All those details are in there on purpose, and each one really builds towards something. So, it pays off in the end.
It's just a really... I don't know. I guess I feel like it's a more satisfying resolution. Like you just feel like you've invested so much, and she wraps all of it up so nicely and shows you what it's kind of like the review, right? Like it was worth the money. It was worth the time you invested into the series.
Mm-hmm.
And the movies are fine, but they're not quite the same investment. So it feels really nice to get that payback.
Yeah. Well, and we just appreciate it. I mean, getting a review like that is fantastic. It means so much to us. You can also give us a review over on Apple Podcasts, and we'll read it out on the show. It's still where most people get their podcasts from, but you don't have to be an Apple user, of course, to listen to us. You can get us wherever podcasts can be had. You know, there's all so many places where that's possible. Just type in Owl Post, of course. Find us over on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. You can, of course, use the hashtag Owl Post to talk with Dre and I there. You can also find us on Facebook. Like us over there, facebook.com/thenerdparty. We've also got a place online where you can send us an email, and that's over at thenerdparty.com. There's the contact section, and if you choose Owl Post, you can send Dre and I an email. We love, you know, getting emails from people and hearing what you have to say. Now, this week, we are in Chapter 14 of The Half-Blood Prince, Felix Felices. And, you know, this chapter, I think, Dre, what you and I were mentioning before we even started recording, like, it's about 95%. Just teenage angst. Like, this is, it's like everything that's been building throughout, you know, the 5.5 books now comes out in this chapter in many ways. And so I think that that's just really funny that we finally just had that explosion.
Yeah. This is, I think, the last book, and he even kind of speaks to it during some of the angst here. We sort of got a big helping of angst when Hermione and Ron wouldn't talk to each other, and they kept sending carrier pigeons back and forth, and then he's remembering when he and Ron didn't talk during book four, and it's all of these, like, he's just like, I don't think I can live with that, like, through a variety of reasons, but that comes up, and that I feel like was, you know, the appetizer course for 3 days of moody Ron.
Yeah.
For no particular reason. It's not like they had a fight and they fell out. Like, this is just pure teenage angst at its best. This is hormones dictating how they feel, which we get some insight into even Harry sort of experiencing this hormonal burst. So, you know, we don't get that same insight into, like, Hermione or anything like that, but we get a sense that they're all feeling very moody right now.
Yeah, and it all kind of kicks off with the fact that, you know, they're in their herbology class, which we don't see them visit too often, but they're in there and they're having this conversation about, like, you know, why Dumbledore is having Harry learn all this stuff, which I think, you know, we had talked about that a little bit earlier, but it's interesting that they're raising this question, this, you know, Ron, Harry, and Hermione, and they don't really have an answer other than, you know, Hermione's like, obviously, you know, it makes sense that you would want to learn this stuff so you could find out Voldemort's, you know, weaknesses. But other than that, you know, I mean, so far, nobody's really, you know, in this Trinity is able to kind of put the pieces together as to exactly why Dumbledore's, and Dumbledore himself hasn't necessarily revealed his full intentions behind all of this, other than the fact that he thinks it's important for Harry to learn. And so it's interesting that they are having this conversation, and yet it devolves into a fight pretty quickly because Hermione gets asked about the quote unquote slug club and how Gwendolyn Jones, you know, the captain of the Holyhead Harpies, was there. And Ron just kind of gets set off because, you know, he's not a part of the slug club. He hasn't been asked to be a part of it. And it just kind of devolves into a fight between him and Hermione. And honestly, Harry doesn't want to have any, like, he's literally trying to do everything he can to not hear their conversation. Like, he's grunting loudly as he's working with these plants, and he's like, he feels so awkward. He is literally the third wheel in this conversation.
Yeah, so this is one of those, like, goes back to Ron's sort of core, I don't want to say fears, but like his triggers, right? Is this being excluded feeling, and having two of his best friends included in something, and being reminded very blatantly that he's not cool enough or doesn't offer anything. And this, like, feeling of being an outsider and excluded is a common theme. And I think he's already kind of on edge, and all the nerves are going and the hormones are running. And we throw in another dash of you're not good enough, and Hermione doesn't seem to be terribly sensitive to it. And I mean, she makes a good point. It's not really her fault. But, you know, a little decorum might have been nice for her to be aware of her friend's feelings on this, because they know each other well enough. They should be familiar with that. But yeah, I mean, it definitely gets triggered off in that class, and then kind of oddly goes really kind of south and then a little bit north and kind of plateaus in this weird like mesa of awkwardness for all of them.
The Mesa of Welcome to the Mesa of Awkwardness. Watch your
Every
step. It can be a doozy.
Has been on the Mesa of Awkwardness at some point, where she mentioned she was going to ask Ron so he could go with them to this Christmas party. And then they get really uncomfortable with each other. And Harry's like, oh God, what happens if this happens? Like, if this happens and they start dating, like, this is all going to go to pot. Like, yeah. Oh my God, this is awful.
Well, and it's such a funny thing because, you know, as you mentioned, as you were talking, I was thinking about, you know, this is a subtle reference to the British classes system, right? You know, there's still kind of a class system that happens in Britain even today. You know, it's not obviously what it used to be, but there are still segments of it there, and I think what we get is Ron kind of feeling like that. He comes from a lower class family in the Wizarding Society, and he hasn't done anything that kind of helps him transcend that. You know, obviously, Harry's parents and him are famous, you know, for all the wrong reasons.
for all the reasons that you don't choose to be famous
exactly,
for.
Exactly. Almost like being royalty, right? Like, you're not choosing to be born as royalty. You just happen to be born like that, which is interesting as we're recording this now, too. And then, of course,
given the current state of affairs in Britain,
exactly.
Now.
So there you go. A little current politics that will only be understood, you know, by Googling the date later on. And so, and then, you know, with Hermione, too, I mean, she's somebody who, again, she's not even a part of the wizarding culture, and in the sense of her family isn't. You know, she comes from a Muggle parents, so
and they've established that they're very middle class, right? Like, they're comfortable, they don't really ask for much, but they're clearly not affluent. You know, they went skiing at Christmas, so they clearly have some funds. Like, they've made her very like she's okay with. She's never wanted for anything, right?
Right. Well, and I would say not just that, but then too, you know, Hermione is one of those people who's been able to distinguish herself for all the right reasons, right? Because of her brain, because of and part of that too. I mean, Hermione's obviously been given a gift that she's been born with to be somebody who is very smart, but she also uses that gift to the best of her ability, and she continually pours into that gift, you know? She refines it. She studies all the time. Like, she works very hard to keep herself as sharp mentally and be as educated as possible. So she's taken that gift and she's really run with it, and people have noticed. And so I think, you know, it's kind of the same way where Ginny is a part of the Slug Club, because Slughorn saw her do something pretty amazing magically and was impressed, right? So Ginny has a real, you know, inkling for hexing people. She's really good at it. So, you know, it's like and the thing about Ron is we just really haven't seen that in him yet. But I think, unfortunately for him, a lot of the qualities to which Ron really exhibits, which is loyalty, is not something that is visually seen. It's felt, though, by those that are around him.
Well, and it's not something that a person like Slughorn would necessarily place a lot of value on, right? Like, his whole family may come from a lesser class, but they, we've talked about it to a great extent, always do the right thing. Like, they are always standing up for the right thing. They do the right thing even when it's hard. Like, that's just their kind of their family motto, right? Like, their crest is just hard work and being genuinely good people. And so it's interesting because except for the one black sheep we have in the family that we haven't really talked much about in this book. But it's really interesting because the things that Ron does embody, he hasn't really found himself yet, like some of the other characters have. Like, he didn't come in with a defining quality. He actually came in with kind of down on himself for being one of, you know, five or six children, not being unique. That was his thing, is he was kind of down in the dumps about it since day one. His most defining element thus far has been that he's friends with Harry Potter, right? So he's still finding himself and figuring out what makes him unique and special and how to use his gift in the best way possible. And he's a little bit of a late bloomer in that sense. And I'm sure that that's only feeding more of his, you know, self-doubt and criticism as we continue to see throughout this chapter. As we're reminded three or four times that he could be a great keeper if only he believed in himself. Mm-hmm. And that's something we keep going back to, is he needs to have the confidence. He needs to believe he can do it. And he just doesn't throughout this whole chapter.
And this is the, you know, I would say one of the places what you were mentioning too is where we get in this, where Harry realizes what's going on between these two, even though these two may not completely be there yet or willing to admit it out loud. At least in this moment, because even Ron, he, you know, Hermione says to him, would you rather I take McLagan? And he says very quietly, no, I wouldn't. Like, you get this feeling like it's like this painful admission for him, and it hurts him to even think about her being with somebody else, right? But he doesn't have the guts to be like, I like you, Hermione, and let's figure this out. You know, let's get together. Yeah. No, he just doesn't know how to do that. And
we're just a verity of songs today.
Yeah, I know. But then you got Harry on the other side, who is like, man, what happens if they get together?
My two best friends date, and this goes south. Yeah.
Which is interesting because, you know, when my wife and I got together, our moms are best friends. So we're like, man, if we screw this up, whew, it could be really bad, right? And my brother-in-law was my best friend, and he's married to my sister. So I have been in all of these type of dynamics before, and it is interesting to be in them. But at the same time, you know, you tend to be with best friends with people for a reason, and they're also the people you can trust the most, for the most part. And so, like, having my best friend marry my sister ended up being great, you know, because nobody I trusted more to be with her than him. And so, yeah, they're...
Which is hilarious that you say that, because in this chapter, we actually get sort of Harry believing the opposite, right?
Oh, yeah.
So at some point, after Quidditch practice, Harry and Ron, I'm going to jump ahead a little bit because a lot of this is just teenage angst in Quidditch practice.
Yeah, it's pretty, yeah. It's very much all just that.
Yeah, pretty much. And Ron and Harry walk in on Ginny snogging Dean Thomas, who's been invited to join the Quidditch team because Katie Bell is still at St. Mungo's and she's not coming back anytime soon, as we heard last chapter. And, we catch them snogging and Ron loses his mind, like legitimately goes crazy on her and like pulls his wand and the whole thing, talking about how she shouldn't do that and it's embarrassing for him. And she snaps back that it's all because he hasn't had any practice and he's never snogged anyone before. And he's the only one that's behind and he's still a 12-year-old boy. Like, she goes at him. She does not hold back. And he just gets so incredibly angry about this. And then we have Harry also having kind of a strong reaction to seeing Ginny make out with Dean Thomas, right? And he convinces himself that it's just because he feels like Ginny is a sister to him too, right? And kind of at the end of this thought process, he says something about like, she is your best friend's sister. You would never do anything to jeopardize your friendship with Ron. Which is such the opposite of what you were just saying, that Ron, he knows Ron wouldn't accept something like that and he would never jeopardize his friendship. So
right.
She's a sister to him. She is a sister to him, right? Which is just such a different, I mean, they're two polar opposite ways of looking at the same situation. Matt's is probably a little bit more mature the way you're thinking about it. But then again, you're not a 16-year-old.
No, I wasn't at the time. I was older, and so it wasn't as difficult to be more mature about it. You know, they are 16 here, and it's very difficult. But the whole thing I love here is that, you know, Harry definitely realizes that he's got some feelings for Ginny that aren't sisterly, that are very, like, because he's imagining himself kissing her in the corridor, you know? So it's like, woo! You know, so it's getting hot in here, you know?
It's just hormone. This is just the episode of hormones. Yeah, hormones and songs.
It's hormones and songs, which, you know, so many songs are about hormones.
Pretty much all of them.
It really is getting crazy up in Hogwarts. And, you know, it's interesting because there's so much teenage angst happening because, like you mentioned, like the fact that he made Dee Thomas the other chaser instead of Seamus makes Seamus upset. And so it's like there's all of these layers of teenage angst happening, right? And of course, everybody's being forced to live together, so they have to deal with it in one way or another. And I think, you know, what makes this such a fascinating chapter is just watching all of these kids try to navigate this. And some do it more successfully than others. And, you know, strangely enough, the one person who kind of navigates this whole thing better than everybody else in this chapter is Harry. Everybody else...
And Ginny.
Doesn't...
I mean, she gets a little angry.
Ginny does get a little angry, but I was... Yeah, you're right. She actually handles herself very well, too, because one, she stands up for herself. And two, you know, she puts her brother in his place when he tries to call her names. And he has no right to be able to do that, you know? And... she's kind of right in how she comes at him, which is basically you're just jealous because everybody's getting some and you're not, in the sense of snogging, not anything
else. And she's also like, she is trying to find herself. I talked a little bit about that. Ron hasn't really found himself yet. Right. She's doing that. She's doing the thing that she's finding herself and not caring what other people think about her and stuff like that. I mean, that's a very bold way to be a teenager, especially knowing she's just a little bit younger than them. You know, it's like she seems to be handling herself pretty well, and Harry seems to be, for the most part, handling himself pretty well. But Hermione and Ron are just like hormones off the charts. Like, they're just their own little teenage selves, particularly Ron, who, you know, Harry, after all of this, after he fights with Ginny, and he actually follows up that conversation, because one of the things that Ginny throws at him is that, you know, Hermione snogged somebody, you know, she snogged Victor Crumb. And that really stings Ron in a big way, based on kind of the beginning of this chapter, right? He asks Harry if he thinks it's true, and Harry can't bring himself to answer it, but apparently his lack of answer was enough be an answer for Ron. It's that moment where you don't have to answer the question. They already know what you're trying to say, what you want to say. And the thing that really throws this like teenage angst into overdrive is that this upsets Ron for like 3 or 4 days. It's not just like he sleeps it off and is a little pissy the next morning. It's like a week of Ron being unpleasant to everyone.
Well, and you know, part of that too is that Harry cannot, how do you explain, he's like, how do I explain, he's thinking in his head, how do I explain to Hermione that the problem is that you snogged Victor Crumb and not Ron? Like, how do I explain that to her? That's not my job, you know? Like, so there isn't really a way for him to be the peacemaker that he's been able to be before between these two, because this is their problem to figure out. But
well, and Hermione didn't do anything wrong, right?
It's not even like she did.
Oh, you upset him because of X, Y, Z. Like, he's upset because he has feelings for Hermione and he can't man up and say it, right? Yep. Like, that's really what the problem is here. And that Hermione's living her life in the meantime and he's upset about it. So really, it's Ron's problem.
it absolutely is his problem. And, you know,
but he can't really explain that to Hermione because he doesn't want to get involved, to your point.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and this also is Harry's problem because Ron is sucking at Quidditch right now, and they're about to play Slytherin, and he doesn't know a way to make this better, but then he thinks of a brilliant idea that really pisses Hermione off, because she thinks that what happens is that Harry gives Ron the Felix Felicis, and everything that day goes perfectly.
Well, he has all this good luck. It's great weather. We have, like, their lead chaser not play, and then Malfoy is sick, which I feel like is important and we need to remember.
Yeah. And Ron is able to save everything. Ginny's having a great game. Harry's able to catch the snitch. And everything goes great. I also love the very end of the game where the commentator, Zachariah Smith, has been such a turd towards Ginny and Harry and Ron and just the Gryffindors in general that she crashes into the announcer part of the stadium. and McGonagall is not happy about it.
Sorry, McGonagall. I guess I forgot to break.
And Ron and Harry is so... like, he is just elated with this. And I love the moment where he gives Ginny a hug. And then it says that he, like, hugs her real quick. And then he lets go because he doesn't want to make it awkward. And then, like, he doesn't even, like, really look her in the face. And so there's, yeah, it's really funny. And then they, you know, Ron and Harry get confronted by Hermione, thinking that this is what happened. And this is, I think, where the real genius of Harry Potter in this chapter comes to play. It's awesome.
Yeah, I love that. So she saw him. So Hermione saw him put something in Ron's drink. And then Ron, out of spite, drank it all, even though Hermione told him not to because, you know, teenage angst. Should just be hashtag teenage angst. And so all that happens. So then she comes over and is super angry and accuses him of putting the Felix Felicis in there, which Ron at this point has also come to the conclusion is that that's what happened. And it turns out Harry didn't do anything. He pretended to put something in Ron's drink because he knew that all along this was just psychological and that there was nothing, like there was nothing that... that nothing was needed to give to Ron for him to be a good player. He just needed to get out of his own way. And I just love how clever he does that. And he knew exactly what he did. It was hilarious.
Yeah, it's great. And, you know, it's funny, too, because Hermione doesn't really want to go celebrate with them. And she kind of goes off her own way. Ron and Harry go up to the celebration, and by the time Harry gets there, Ron is just having a great time with Lavender Brown. They are snogging in front of everyone, which is awkward for everyone, you know, watching. And
Except for Ginny, apparently.
Yeah, and Ginny. But Harry and Ginny have a really cute moment. So.
Ginny was like, well, it kind of looks like he's trying to eat her face, but I guess we all need practice, so you know, whatever.
She's like, much more forgiving than her brother.
she's so laissez-faire about it. That's one of those like maturity moments, right? Like she easily could be like, oh, you were mad at me for doing that. I'm gonna be mad at you. But she was just like, she's like, yep, it looks disgusting, but what are you gonna do?
Well, and she does call him a hypocrite, but she's willing to let it go. Like she just, yeah. It just kind of rolls off her back, which is great. And she, you know, tells Harry, you know, good game. And she touches him on the arm and Harry just is like in heaven, you know, like he's Harry. Having a swooning sensation, it says, because woo, he just got touched by Ginny.
Oh, those hormones, they affect everyone differently.
It's great. And this is the part that's really sweet. And I will say I'm not a huge fan of this movie, but the one part that I thought they did really great was this next section where Harry, he's kind of have enough of the party and he goes into a random classroom and he finds Hermione in there who's practicing and she's created these beautiful little, you know, birds. And they're having a conversation, and Harry's hoping that she hasn't seen Ron, but she has. And that's when Ron and Lavender stumble in, I guess, looking for a room to do some more stuff. And she, you know, throws the birds at Ron, and he leaves yelping as they, like, cover and peck his face. And that's kind of where we lead the chapter. So we really end with some serious teenage angst. Like, it's heavy.
It's different in the movie a little bit. There's kind of a notable difference. In the movie, it feels a little more equitable their sort of the situation with Hermione, because in that situation, Harry has just seen Ginny with Dean Thomas.
Yeah.
And he's a little down in the dumps too. And she sees Ron with Lavender and she's a little down in the dumps. And they have a moment where it kind of is like this unspoken, our people are making out with other people moment. And we're missing a little bit of that equity here because it kind of put it on level playing ground that like, hey, there's this thing we don't talk about, but we're going to kind of talk about it right mm-hmm. now because I'm going to support you even if it's uncomfortable sort of thing. And this one's definitely a little more one-sided in that, you know, there's kind of nothing about Ginny. It's all about Hermione and Ron and that dynamic and how Harry fits into that, which it works with the chapter. You don't need to put that right. Ginny part in there here. But yeah, that's really the only difference. But I agree that visually it plays out in the movie, mm-hmm. like how I'm picturing it in my head.
Yeah. Well, and part really of that, I think, job. Is that, you know, with the book, we have so much more where we're getting to be inside Harry's head, whereas they kind of, I felt in the movie, they needed a place where you verbalize, you know, kind of what's right. going on inside. And so, right. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm really interested because, you know, we have this chapter. I mean, there is not a lot that really happens in it other than what you mentioned, I think, is that what's going on with Malfoy really seems to be the big issue. And then, of course, you know, the change in all of these relationships for the students, which is also important. But as for the rest of the plot line of the story, that hasn't really moved forward just yet in this chapter. And so, you know, we'll get to chapter 15 next week, The Unbreakable Vow. And I feel like some things are going to come into play there since we saw an unbreakable vow at the very beginning of the book with Snape and Narcissa Malfoy. So sounds like we're going to be revisiting maybe some of those ideas, which is really, I'm excited about that. So
I'm excited. We're at a good point in the book. We're about halfway now, I'd say. Yeah, around that mark. It's time to start moving some of the
yep.
plot of this book forward. We've moved some of the plot of the overarching story across all the books forward. But it's time to get some momentum, I think, going mm-hmm. a little bit. We're at that teenage plateau, that mesa of awkwardness, and now we gotta go down the roller coaster.
Now we gotta find our way off of it.
Everyone wants off of that.
So Drea, since you're off that mesa, if anybody wants to catch up with you on Twitter and see your mesa of 2-year-old awkwardness, where can they find you?
My mesa of just regular awkwardness.
Yeah.
No longer teenager. Hasn't been for a long time.
I think we all have our own mesa of awkwardness, don't we?
We do. I think we do. Our mesa of weirdness. Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at PCFchick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And I am on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and Vero under the name MattRushing02. I'm here on the network doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills, talking about Star Wars each and every week. You can find me on the Trek FM network. I'm doing two shows. One's called The Orb. That's about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I'm also on the General Geek Show over there, the 602 Club, talking about, you know, all the fandoms that we love. And I'm also doing cinema stories with my good friend Courtney, where we talk about films, the ones of faith. But thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.